Welcome to the Other F Word Podcast with Morgan,
Sarah,
and Melissa,
where we talk about that dreaded word, failure. Join us as we explore the messy, tragic, funny, and inspiring stories that make us human. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Other F Word Podcast. Thank you all for joining us. And remember, if you are loving the podcast, please rate, review, share it with your friends, and get the good word out. And email us. That's Bipasha back there telling me to email for y'all to email us. Thank you, Bipasha, for all your work. We appreciate you, Bipasha. She likes us to say that every episode multiple times. Email us with any questions or if you want to share your stories of failure. But on to the episode. We are here with Jessica Winther. She is an actress, comedian, writer. She likes to read erotica. She's a shitty mom, but with good kids.
No, she's decent kids.
Decent kids.
I can't forget any of this. When I had kids, my husband worked a lot out of town. So I thought when I had kids that I had to be, I was an actress. And then I kind of had kids and my son, and I just freaked out and went, oh my God, I've got to be the perfect parent. I just have to take every piece of creative energy I've ever had in my entire life and be the best mom, mm-hmm. the one. And not that my mom wasn't a good mom. She worked her ass off and she really tried to be, she was the best mom she could be.
Right.
But I was like, I'm going to be better. Like I've got to, and of course I was like, I have to be the best. And I kind of put all this pressure. So I went into this whole Uber mom world where I became a PTA president of my kid's school, which I'm off the charts. I mean, you can't tell because you can't see me, but like, I never say anything right. I'm kind of cuckoo. I don't do anything traditionally, but I really tried to like follow some Leave It to Beaver bullshit that I was like, I'm going to do this. It's right. going to be.
If it kills me.
Yes. Yeah. And if it kills me. And I kind of did it. I mean, everybody was like, she's weird, but whatever. And I surrounded myself with more socially normal people. Right? That's smart. What you do.
Yeah.
That's what I did. And then my son had, I might cry, but I won't. I'm not going to cry.
You can.
I know. I'll try not to cry just because it'll just be a second. Yeah. Like, it's just like a minute.
It's emotional.
But it is. It really, my son ended up getting strep and the flu. He always had problems, chronic allergies from the age of two. And I even was that mom who took him everywhere, like the acupuncturist. Like, who takes their two-year-old to an acupuncturist? I was like, and I would take, or massage, or,
right.
And he had chronic allergies. And then when he was seven, he got the flu and strep, and it just changed his personality. And they put him on antibiotics and he started hallucinating. And I called the doctor and I said, listen, he goes, I think your son is schizophrenic.
Oh.
So over the phone, as I'm telling the doctor what happened, he's like, and I was like, oh hell no, my son just couldn't have woken up one day and become schizophrenic. But this was the beginning of the journey of the doctors of the illness. And it was a year where he kept getting chronic strep and he was a little baseball kid and he, at that I coach, thank you,
God.
Sport I knew nothing about.
And but I was Uber mom,
right?
Was gonna coach.
But I was like, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to read the book of dummies for baseball and I'm going to be that mom. And I'm out there pregnant, coaching my kid, not knowing anything, just standing in the outfield. But like, he was playing baseball and he was going to school, but he'd get strep and then he would hallucinate and he'd have terrible dreams. Ugh. And at seven, they're like, oh, they have these little nightmares, right? The night terrors.
Right.
And like, you can kind of put it in, but then he got better. Like he was like, he's schizophrenic, but then he got better and wasn't schizophrenic because after he went on antibiotics. And it just became a series of weird shit after that. And he looked good and then he wasn't good. And our pediatrician, I'm like, something's wrong. And she's like, oh, it's you. And I was like, okay.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
And he kind of went in, I put him on a strong bout of antibiotics and he kind of went into a remission, although he had a few ticks. Like he.
Pandas? Did anybody
pandas,
say pandas?
That's what my son has is pandas.
Yeah.
I love that you know. Yeah.
You totally took the punchline away.
Because
you know.
Yeah.
And by the way, no one knows, right?
Yeah. It's not so rare, but strangely, a lot of doctors don't know about it.
They don't.
So
And he's 18 now. So that was 10 years ago. Oh, no wow. one knew about it.
So what is it?
And it's a pediatric acute. I'm not going to say it correctly because I'm special. Because it's an acronym.
It is an acronym.
Pediatric acute neurological disorder syndrome.
Yeah.
It's basically where your brain swells from a virus.
Right.
Wow.
And it's strep.
And it's strep.
Specifically strep.
No. It can also be the flu.
Okay, yes.
And
right.
Really a strong virus, yeah. right? Because it started off with specifically strep, but then they started seeing it in people with the flu and something that it breaks the blood brain barrier and it goes in and this is the last thing
that you're going
to think, right?
Right. And what about the antibiotics? Why were they making something
about
hallucinate?
And not all antibiotics. There's something in the antibiotic that not only kills the virus, the bacteria, but it also coats some part of the brain. There's an additive in it that does it kind of, and it shuts it down. And my son was on antibiotics for years.
That's the problem.
Amoxicillin.
Right.
Yeah. And we come from that place.
Right. That era.
No antibiotics.
Right. Well, I just thinking about how you put all this pressure on yourself to be a perfect parent. And there's nothing scarier when your kid gets sick and then they don't get better. And then So forget you. You can't, there's nothing scarier. There's nothing worse as a mom.
Yeah. And you're trying,
especially if you're trying to be perfect,
to find the answers. Mm-hmm. And as a mom, and not every parent is like this. I love to say, like, women, we know as moms, we know our kids. That's actually not true. I know there's a lot of people out there that don't, right? They don't know how to read the signs.
Yeah.
And you're scared.
You're scared.
So you don't really want to read the signs because you're kind of like, oh my God, if I go here, what does this mean?
Totally.
So there's
or you overread. You kind of over underread.
Yes.
It's hard to get that.
And you turn
balance.
Towards your specialists, your doctors to tell you. And when they say it's you or it's nothing.
It's nothing.
When
it's
you
nothing.
Know that this is not nothing.
It's crazy making. It is absolutely crazy making. And that to me is one of the biggest failures of the medical system and our society that there is. Well, also, I get that there's no tolerance when it's your kid because you're terrified and it's hard to, we talk about like sitting in the failure and sitting in the uncomfortable emotion. But when it's your kid who's sick and you're terrified, it's so hard. And there's nothing around us to kind of help. I'm thinking to myself, there was nothing to help you get through that.
Well, and it's interesting because if your child has cancer or your child has something that's noticeable.
Yeah.
People are like, oh my God, let's get you in. And actually, when your child has something that you cannot physically see, so it's any kind of, I mean, it's funny because people will say it's a mental issue, mental illness.
Well,
thank you.
To diagnose schizophrenia like that.
Which was, it was not schizophrenia.
But somebody
right?
said pandas.
Oh.
And then, somebody guided you.
It's fun. It was later, 5 years later.
Wow.
That he kind of went into a remission.
That's a long time.
Yes. He went into a remission, and the only thing that we saw, he didn't get strep.
Poor kid.
Didn't get anything. And this is going to get a little weird for some people, but it followed the vaccinations. So here's the thing. It's not the vaccine that necessarily set him off. It's not the vaccine putting it in that gave him pandas, but because with autoimmune disorders, your body starts to attack itself. So anything foreign, that's what happens even with the flu or a virus. You're putting a virus in. So what happened is any kind of shot he would get, his body would go on overdrive and it attack itself because it doesn't know how to fight it like normal like a normal system. And then everything would trigger.
Yeah.
So he can't get flu shots or anything.
He can't get any
vaccines. And I think that is true for certain people. I think the majority of people can.
Sensitivity.
And it's important that they do, obviously. But I think there are certain people. I've heard stories.
Well,
the same
my daughter
thing.
Gets
same
vaccinated.
Thing.
Fine.
Yeah.
Fine. Not a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But her constitution is stronger.
And it's a different. Mm-hmm. It's also about just different constitution.
Yeah.
There's some sort of chemical makeups, people's biologies that.
And it's in you.
And it, yeah.
I mean, my son had all kinds of strange issues. Like his arm stopped working. Or like he had a chronic, what we would call little league elbow. That was not that at all. It was what pandas that was
joint pain
like rheumatoid arthritis
associated with
swelling.
It goes with fibromyalgia, like it's all related. Autoimmune disorders are so interesting they're because so we don't, it's inflammation.
Yes.
It's inflammation in your body. That's what it is. And if you get the inflammation down, then you're good. I want to step back a minute. My son was, he went into remission and you from, I think from like second grade to fifth grade. So he had, again, he had just little tics, like clearing his throat.
Which is a big sign of PANDAS.
Yes.
But a combination of tics and history of strep.
Yes. But here, no one has mentioned PANDAS yet. Okay. Shocking. We've never heard PANDAS. And at this point, he was in remission. I hadn't seen kind of any, like I was just going to my doctor. He hadn't had strep for like 4 years or 3 years. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, we're good. You know, like I was like, we're out of the woods.
Right.
We are out of the woods. And he had the little tics and I'm like, okay, fine. He has tics, whatever.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's okay because we were also in an environment where there were kids with autism. So he was in a class with kids with all kind, ADHD. We were in a very unified, cool environment where it was accepting of all types of stuff. So in fifth grade, he gets immunized and we end up going on a location and my husband's working and we end up going to see him. And we get the shots. We end up in North Carolina and my son gets strep.
Mm.
And he hasn't had strep in 3 or 4 years, right? And I'm freaking out. So once that happened and they put him on an antibiotic and he got sick on it and he got lice and I got lice.
Oh,
it was like,
Jesus, what a nightmare.
One of the biggest failures in life.
Totally, right?
And getting lice.
I don't know what.
Especially for a perfect mom.
I know.
Oh my God.
Another failure.
Right.
So many.
By the way, these are
so
all many. Things. This is all... telling me or what I'm thinking when everything about everything you're saying is that these are all things that are out of your control. And when you're trying to be the perfect mom, it's all about being in control. And all these things are like being thrown at you like, guess what? You don't get to be in control.
Oh, yes. Again. All the way through.
You're going to keep getting this lesson
over
and over again.
Well, welcome to parenting.
Welcome to life.
Yes.
And I didn't even ever realize how controlling I was until I had no control with my son.
Right. I get
that. And when I was asking and trying to figure, so I got here, his brain, this time he started to hallucinate again. He collapsed on the floor. He broke a tooth. He didn't know how he did it. I mean, and I said, I take him to our doctor, and there she wasn't. My doctor wasn't there. They had a step in right with somebody who's standing in on call doctor, and he goes, "Have you ever thought about PANDAS?" And I was like, "What's PANDAS?" And here I am looking like schizophrenia and all this weird stuff. And and he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "I think your son has PANDAS." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Okay." And I started researching PANDAS,
and there it is.
Like, I ended up staying online and finding a group up at Stanford of doctors and nurse practitioners whose kids had PANDAS.
Oh, wow.
They had an Excel sheet online. Mm. It was the beginning of the PANDAS network.
Wow.
It was parents who had written in and what their symptoms were on an Excel spreadsheet online posted on.
Amazing.
And that's where I was like, oh my God, my son has this. Yeah. And everyone was like, antibiotics, antibiotics, antibiotics. And I wasn't proactive enough because I read it and then I was like, kind of in denial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, he can't, like, this can't be. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, no, this can't.
It scared you.
It's scary. It terrified me.
Yeah.
Because you just had 3 years where things were kind of
where things were good. And I was like, it'll go away. This is going to pass.
Because it did. It did.
It did. Right. Yes. Yeah. You're right. And I was like, it'll go away. This is going to pass. And we're just going to put him on these antibiotics and we're going to get through this. And we put him on the antibiotics and I found an immunologist and then she gave him a shot. And he, at that point, he was seeing bright lights and he couldn't sleep. And he's like, Mom, I'm seeing bright lights. I can't. I mean, it was just one thing after another and he was playing soccer and he was playing baseball and he was 12 and he was in middle school. How do you tell the school? You don't want them to think your kid is weird. You don't want, he's at a private school where this stuff isn't quite accepted. And you're kind of walking in like, we're going to fix him. Hayden's sick, you know, like, oh, he's sick. We're going to get him back in a couple days. I ended up getting a neurologist who we did EEGs, EKG, like we were doing, he had the whole thing, but I did it. They sent me home and with the whole unit on him and I had to gauge him all weekend and they set it up wrong. I was there for 4 hours.
Oh my God.
And then she's like, we found nothing. And they've taken his blood and his blood palates look great. And I'm like, I'm telling you, he's not great. And in 1 week, I watched a normal kid who was in pre-algebra and he was it. I mean, he's this AB student, so smart, out there playing baseball, playing soccer, amazing, to look at me and go, I know I'm supposed to know 2 + 2, but for some reason, I just can't remember what it
is. Wow, that's terrifying. God.
And he's like, I know I'm supposed to know her name because I think we're related, but I don't know. And I'm watching him and everyone's saying, he's a teenager. Oh. This is what happens. And I'm like, no. And unfortunately, not only did the doctors reject me, but my family couldn't see it. So I never really have relied on anyone my life. I mean, I've been pretty independent at a very young age because I had to. And I've never asked really anyone for any help. And at that point, I asked for help and no one was there. Oh, and I was like collapsing. And I was like, oh my God, what do you do? You know, you're at that point where you're sitting here and the doctors are saying no and you're crying for help and everyone's like, you're not handling this well at all. And I was like, fuck no, I'm not. Yeah. You know, like, you are right, I'm not. And I'm falling apart. So within that, I ended up getting this lady up in Stanford. Her name will come to me. I don't know why I'm going blank right now, who was a nurse practitioner and she worked with Stanford, but she wasn't. And she had a seminar, a panda seminar. And one night as I'm researching all the pandas online, I was like, and I'm starting to crack. Like I'm now starting to crack. And, I go to her, I see that she has a seminar in San Francisco and I never leave my kids. And I was like, I'm flying up for the day. I'll be back in the night. And I flew up there. I actually flew up that night. I booked the ticket right then, flew out of Burbank, went to San Francisco and went to the seminar. And I literally sat in there and was like, I am home.
Wow.
Everyone in there, all these parents were suffering and their stories. I mean, my son had a mild case of this compared to what these parents had gone through. They were all like, we have PTSD. Yeah. We have therapists. Like this has changed our lives. Yeah. Some parents had older kids that just were gone because they didn't get it in time and they didn't treat it properly. And they had lost their kids. Their brains had gone and there weren't enough doctors. And you had people from all over the world there. And 25 different symptoms and everybody has a different one.
Oh my
God. Nobody has the classic. There's no class. I mean, there are like strep goes with it and certain things, tics, but there's no classic. Everyone has a different kind of path. Yeah. So it's so hard to diagnose. Mm-hmm. And that is what I will say in the defense of doctors. Yeah. But you have to run tests that regular doctors don't run.
Right.
His markers looked fine. Right. And his brain was swollen. It was encephalitic. So like, there's stuff they didn't know. And so many people just shut the door on me.
Yeah.
I ended up in a therapist's office at one point. It took me 6 months. She's supposedly like a top therapist who'd seen like 3 cases of pandas, right? Now I'm looking for anybody who's seen pandas here in LA. Because I was like, I'm not going to, I flew back.
Keep flying
and I'm like, I can't fly. And for 2 years I did it. I found the doctors here and it was a back and forth and Hayden got better, and once he started high school, there were certain times of the season he wasn't good, and he started baseball, and everyone's like, he's going to be this, he is a stud, and he's going to be this athlete, and he's going to do this, and he had such a great year, and then in the spring collapsed, and he got it again, and he missed like a month of school, I ended up taking him up north, and seeing this nurse, not even a doctor, and she took about a shoebox full of blood. She tested for everything, staph. She tested his fecals, like hair, anything you can test. And when I took him in, he'd gotten over the pandas episode. It lasts about 6 to 8 weeks, and he'd gotten over that, but he had mono.
Oh, God.
And so when I finally, this is 2 years later that I finally took him up there. It took me 2 years to go and see her because I was like, I can solve it here. And when I got him up there, he had staff. He had full on mono Epstein Barr. He tested positive for West Nile. He had an infection in his lungs that he still, he will probably always come and go. It goes with pandas. And I'm like, how is he walking and semi-normal?
Yeah.
And we kept throwing him back into school. And he, not only did we throw him back in school, we would tutor him to catch up for the 6 to 8 weeks he missed. So he would be in school and tutoring and trying to keep up his grades. Yeah, I failed as a parent there. That was not, and pushing him through baseball. And, you know, I kept trying to keep normalcy.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I get that.
I went into the school and fought for him to stay. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go to the Archdiocese. I didn't even know what that was because I'm not Catholic.
But did he want to be normal? Was he wanting to stay in his grade and with his friends and his normal life?
Yeah. I was, but I also, in retrospect, I got him on track, and when I got him on track, finally, I collapsed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And makes sense. Because I was in fight or flight
So long.
And I was like, I'm going to get you better. And when I finally figured out and kind of got a grip on it and knew what was happening, I collapsed. And It was interesting. He wanted to be normal, to answer to your question. He wanted to play baseball. He wanted to, but I think he wanted to do it mostly for us. I think
that's interesting.
I didn't realize I am that draw. I mean, my husband was gone and I was facilitating his dream for our son and doing this.
But so you did so much of this on your own.
Yeah.
If not all of it. So you weren't just, you know, dealing with the pressure and the trauma and the fears and anxieties that, you know, you have and all this unknown, this incredible, I mean, that's
when it's your kid,
overwhelming, man. When it's your kid, not knowing and not being able to help, but you were doing it on your own because your husband was away so much.
And my family, didn't understand it. And my friends didn't understand it. And like I said, your kid has cancer.
Yeah,
they get
there.
That.
Right.
Your kid has this weird thing and is kind of walking around sometimes and semi-normal and not normal. And he looks normal and they don't get it. And the thing is you're right. When I was like, and how do you, I don't want sympathy or empathy. Like I needed just understanding. Needed, I need people to go, okay, I got your back. Yeah. I didn't need them to show up with meals.
Yeah.
I didn't need them to like go, oh my God. I just needed people to go, okay, keep going.
Right.
Keep going, sister. Yeah. You're good. Yeah. You're good. Mm. And I probably should have gotten a therapist sooner than I did. Mm-hmm. I got him back up and we took him out of school. That school. And it was like, oh my God, now where am I going to get him in school? We got to graduate high school because we still got to keep the normalcy, right? He's got to graduate. Mm-hmm. Like you can't not grad. So stupid. Oh my God. All the things that I thought were important.
Yeah.
It's like, and even though his health was the first thing, it was like, still, it was for me, I was just like, I need to make you healthy. And for my husband, I think because he was working. I mean, he was supporting this expensive, very expensive medical issue because it's not covered. We were spending, about $50,000 out of pocket a year to kind of figure out, because I was taking him to acupuncturists. I was taking him to, kinesiologists. I was taking him to chiropractors. I was taking him to massage therapy. I was like, he was on packets of herbs. I was doing it wasn't like I was just going into a doctor.
Right.
I was going to multiple doctors to figure out and to help him any way I could.
But this was before the panda's diagnosis.
This was before and after. Oh, yeah. Because with pandas, it is inflammation. Mm-hmm. And the way to gauge it is to check and balance your inflammation. Mm-hmm. And I ended up putting him into a school, another island of misfit toys, which was actually the best place one-on-one. And it had a recording studio. And the one thing is Hayden kept getting weird injuries through this because it kind of goes hand in hand. I know it sounds strange, but it does.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I've always made him play piano. So I was like, okay, well, now you got to pick up guitar. And if you're home, you got to do something. So I had him playing instruments, and he has now an affinity at 18 for instruments. So the school I found had a recording studio, and one-on-one, you're not sitting around a petri dish of kids. So you're not going to pick up everybody's stuff, and you're not now playing sports like D1 sports. So now the stress of that is off of you. So now your job is to go to school and to learn at your own pace and do what you need to do. And his health actually
got better.
Awesome. Wow.
When I pulled back and stopped the chaos, which by the way, is the hardest thing to look at as a parent when you're like, oh yeah, okay. None of that was important.
Right.
And he got better. And I'm not telling, I mean, literally a month after, I just started having anxiety.
Of course, because that's how it works. Because you could.
Yes, there was room because I could.
Finally
there was room for me.
Right.
So
right.
It was like a little creep. And actually, I'd had a little bit before. And I'd had little bouts of it. But I was, again, I just want to go back 1 second. When the doctor saw Hayden for the first time, I said, how does he still look okay and have everything wrong with him? And she goes, your kid has been playing normal for about 8 years, 9 years. If he's been in a regular school and playing baseball, he's been pretending to be normal.
Wow.
He has a super strong constitution. Cut to, here I am with anxiety. And I'm like, you are not going to have anxiety.
Right.
You can't have it. It is not who you are.
Well, you're also the captain of the ship.
I am the captain.
Yeah.
And I have a 13-year-old daughter, by the way, that has just fallen to the wayside somewhere in between because I am in the mix with my son.
You're so focused on your son.
Yes. And I am neglecting that. And I'm the only, I don't have nannies raising my kids. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she at that time didn't have I didn't have the parent body rescuing me. I didn't have that support. I just didn't. And so I was, again, kind of letting that happen. And now I'm looking at my daughter and I'm like, oh my God, what's going on in here? And she's, she can't read. She's having problems with reading and she has anxiety and she's feeling not. And I'm like, oh my God, this is happening. And now I'm having anxiety and it's creeping up. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm doing the worst job. And this is somebody who was running a PTA. So I'm slowly, anxiety is creeping in. It's like a year of on and off, right? And then my daughter's in third grade and I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a room parent. And between the psycho stuff that I had to deal with there and then I'm just starting really to fall apart and it's coming more. The anxiety is coming more and I'm trying to work out and I'm turning 40. I mean, a lot of stuff and I'm like, what am I doing? Where do I belong? Oh my God, is my kid going to get sick again? And every day you're waking up and you're like, is he normal today? Is he not normal today? Yeah. Is she okay? Oh my God, I have to handle her dyslexia. What am I going to do? Talking to the teachers. And they're like, no, we'll wait some time. And I'm like, something's wrong with her. Again, something's up. And not trusting my instincts. Mm. It's a constant. I guess my whole life, maybe I was told, oh, you're so big, you're so crazy,
you're too much.
You're too much, to where I actually believed that my true gut feelings weren't real.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I was on the train and here I was and I'm like, something's up. I don't know.
By the way, you also had that reinforced by everybody around you who couldn't deal with the uncertainty or couldn't deal with these issues that weren't obvious to the eye. So you have something like dyslexia, you have something like pandas. They're in the same category in my view.
Well, you just have something.
You have something and nobody knows. Exactly. Exactly. And they're not things that are sort of as tangible. Although having said that, thankfully, dyslexia is becoming sort of more mainstream and people are understanding it better. But still, you're up against people telling you it's your fault. So in addition to what you were told as a child and how you people responded to you, you're...
It's your fault.
Yeah. It's about you.
It's interesting having older children and where you now kind of... All those funny little judgment pieces that you had with your first kid, you're like... Oh, remember when you were like, oh, that girl's off the rails. Oh, you know, oh, I'm never. And then you're like, yeah, it's part of growing up. Yep. Like, you go off the rails. Yep. Like, it's life. Yep. Don't judge them. They're struggling.
Totally.
Listen, we all judge. Okay. There's no way around it. It's also just catching ourselves. I catch myself all the time now.
Right.
Whereas before I was so, which is funny because I do comedy. It's all about like judgment, your feeling on it. And actually I walk up and I have a problem. I'm like, I don't want to be mean to anybody because once I broke, I had PTSD. I had everything. Like I walked into the doctor. I finally I walked into my doctor and was like, I'm in menopause. I thought I was in menopause.
At 40 or at 39.
Yes. I was like, I'm in early menopause because they people say you act crazy and I'm insane. So I'm like in med. I mean, I went into every doctor. Now I'm where I've left. Now I'm going into all the doctors. Yeah. Take my blood. Tell me I'm in menopause.
What's wrong with me?
So what's wrong with me? Because I'm feeling I can't control these feelings, and I don't understand.
You're unraveling.
And I'm unraveling to the point where my conscious and my subconscious world were completely intermeshed. I was like talking to dead people. I couldn't handle anything scary. Mm. I was convinced there were ghosts in my house, which there could have been, and there still could be. I don't know. But at one point, I crossed over into a place that people do when they take ayahuasca.
Which is
what's that?
Ayahuasca is a root that takes... I haven't done it. Okay. This is not done. Okay. I'm just letting you know.
This is something that people do for like alternative therapy.
For spiritual, like in Peru or in South America, where it's
spiritual quests.
Spiritual quests. Mm-hmm. And you supposedly get in touch with your ego. And you have a full-on spiritual awakening with your ego, and it connects you to the spiritual world. Okay. When I read up what ayahuasca was, because I was writing a joke, I was like, oh my God, I was living there for 2 years. This is a 12-hour trip that I took for 2 years. Mm-hmm. So I was in a spiritual PTSD, anxiety-ridden. I'm sure I had 25 other things that I just don't even know how to pronounce. Mm. I'm telling you, I walked in the doctor and I said, listen, I'm really a mess. I think I had a nervous breakdown. And I told him, and I did a trauma release thing. This is really what sent it off. I have anxiety and I write stories. I write books. I've written this book actually called Missing the Signs. Hopefully it hasn't been out there yet. And I'm working on it right now about my son being sick. I was writing the whole time he was sick.
Wow.
So I have all of this documented, which is great because I can't remember.
Thank God you did that. You forget so much. That is smart. Yeah.
Yes. I go into the doctor and I said, I did a trauma release, which is you go in, you tax your lower muscles in your body, and then you lay on the ground and you let it shake. And then you supposedly shake out this anxiety because it's in the chakra. I don't know what it's called, the lower chakra. And you just shake. You just shake. Your lower, like your abdomen is just shaking for as long as you need it to shake.
It's like
you
the can't... Taylor Swift song.
Yeah. Totally. Shake it off. Yes, it is. You are doing a shake off. I'm in there with 12 women. We're in a birthing center. Everyone gets up and they're like, oh my God, I felt like I had an orgasm. That was amazing. All of them. I get up and I'm like, I am super fucked up. Everything is in Technicolor. So I sit up and they've all had orgasms and I'm on acid. Okay? Oh my God. And everything was super bright. And this guy, I was like, oh, I'll release some of my anxiety.
Well, you were probably desperate to have some relief.
Yeah.
I was.
Right.
But that is what set me off into the spiral. Yeah. I came home that night and threw up black bile and pooped black for actually 2 days and slept for about 6 hours straight in the hardest sleep I've ever had. I could not, and I came up with full anxiety, full PTSD, and I was having a full-on acid trip, which is the ayahuasca comparison. Everything was bright. I mean, I went in and just taxed my lower muscles and came out like this. I was like, well, if I could just do that, I can get better. And what was happening is I just kept getting worse.
Yeah.
And then I was on the downward spiral, and I functioned in it like I was still a room parent.
Jesus.
Well, like your son pretending to be normal.
I was pretending to be normal. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, it's interesting when you're collapsing and you try to tell people like, yeah, I'm not good.
People don't
want to
hear.
But you look like you're okay. Yeah. I gained 40 pounds. And I really, like, I was in Pottery Barn Kids, and they have these little gold busts of animals. And I remember looking at the wall and going, oh my God, I know logically that that is not moving, but why do I see that coming at me? I mean, my dreams had meshed into my reality. I had a really good friend that I would call, and she's like, get your ass on medication.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I was so scared to take any medication. I was like, I'm super, because I was a heavy drug user in my youth. So I was scared. I'm super sensitive. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, anything is going to mess me up. Mm-hmm. I'm scared. What's it going to do? Because I already feel so out of control.
Yeah, right.
Like, what if it doesn't work?
Right.
And actually my thing was, what if it doesn't work and I'm fucked up forever?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. Right.
What if I'm sitting in this place and they're like, this doesn't work and this doesn't work. And now I'm stuck. I got to the point where I had written my kids letters and I had said, I'm sorry I've failed you as a mother. Aww. I'm going to have to go in a home because I don't think I'm going to get out of this. Mm-hmm. And I love you so much. Like, it was literally one of those letters that I was just like, I love you and I'm sorry I failed you. And I just felt like a failure because I couldn't get myself. And even though I was still functioning partially, I'd go to school, do my thing, come home, and I couldn't get off the bed. I couldn't get off the floor. I was under the laundry. I mean, I just couldn't get my head together. I was like, and I was fighting. So I would do like all the normal errands. Like, I'm going to the grocery store today. And I'm going to show everybody that I can buy steak. You know, like... And I'm going to cook some dinner tonight and I'm going to take my kids to soccer. You know, like it was, it became a fight to just look normal. Mm. And I'm still in my writing class through this and I don't even know what was going on in there. I was such a hot mess. I can't even imagine. And it was funny. I was writing everything and everyone's like crying in the class and I'm crying. And there's a little girl in this class and she reminded me of me at her age. And she says, you know, I have a therapist. So I call her. She's like, I can't get you in. 6 months I tried to get into her. Maybe less. Maybe it was three, but it felt forever. And I finally get in. And I am now at rock bottom. Wow. Like, this is where it's all ending. And she says to me, I walk in. I'm like, okay, so I need to be in a home. I need to be medicated. I am bipolar. I'm insane. I have PTSD. I don't even know what I have. Like, I'm so crazy. I can't even. And, you know, you get 50 minutes and real therapists only give you 50 minutes to kick your ass out. So I was like, okay, I got to get it all in a minute. Like, and I tell her, like, what's going on? And she's like, okay. And she goes, you're not crazy. There's nothing crazy about you. And I think it was the first time someone had said to me, you're normal. Mm. You're normal. And I was like, what? What? I am crazy. Just say, I know I'm talking to dead people. Like, that's not normal. And I was like, I know that it's not normal. And I was, you know, because you, but the truth is there's pieces of that part. I walked out of her office. I was 20% better. I saw her for 2 months.
Wow.
Three times a week, mm-hmm. and I was 65% better within seeing her within about 6 months. And I still had the anxiety was the last to go.
Yeah.
And you never took medication for it.
So at the end, as I'm getting better, I still have a little anxiety. And she's like, you know, maybe you should go on something. And I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling good. Let's do it.
Right. Oh, boy.
Which is ridiculous, right? I should have been on it.
No, but you had hope that you weren't going to stay broken.
Yes.
So you trusted that,
I did.
That you were going to be okay.
I trusted her.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I knew she was the right person for me, and she was the right person for me.
Another instance of your gut.
Again, my gut told, I didn't even know her, but I knew. I was like, this is where you need to be. This is where you need to go. Another instinct where my intuition guided me, the universe guided me. Mm-hmm. And something that I stopped believing, something that I thought, you have to control your life. You're in control of everything. I do not believe that any longer.
Mm.
I do not believe that we control anything. She has helped me tremendously. There were a lot of things I had to deal with in my life. People I had to cut out. People I had to let back in.
Mm-hmm.
The transition. So the transition, what happened is I was still feeling fucked up inside. But I was getting better. So I said, if I can't change myself from the inside out right now, I'm going to start changing myself from the outside in. So I went and said, fuck it. I want a Range Rover. I'm buying the Range Rover. I took my car in. The lease wasn't up. I didn't care. I was like, I'll get the cheapest one. I don't care, but that's what I want. And so I got it. I was like, you know what? I'm going blonde. I was like, I'm going fully blonde. I pulled a Kardashian. I'm like, I want that hair. And I started running.
Backwards,
forwards, upside down.
Ryman Canyon.
Every day I started running.
I can run too.
No,
I would just run. Right? I'd run, right? Oh, you just run. Well, you just keep running.
It is true. You start, and I started slow. Like I was not a runner. I hated running. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend ran, and I was like, run ahead. It's so stupid. You're like, hurt your. And I started running, and I was like, it's for my head.
Yep.
And I started 100%. Slowly, and I started, I mean, 1 mile. And then at one point I was like at 7 miles.
Yeah.
And excuse me. And then I just kept going, and I had some really interesting spiritual awakenings on this. And that's, I've always been, I'm an empath, which I didn't really know until recently, which makes sense.
Can you explain what that means to people?
An empath is when you pick up everybody's bullshit. No, it's like you're very sensitive intuitively. So you pick up energy, or you pick up actually the subtext of what someone is saying without them saying it.
Right.
You can walk into a room, and you can, if you are really open, you will pick up every piece of energy in that room. A lot of people know how to block it.
Yeah, because it could be exhausting.
Overwhelming.
It's, yes. Sensitive. What's interesting coming out of this is I feel like, which is going to sound totally hokey pokey, I feel like I connected to the universe in a way. It scared me because I didn't understand, but through some of my dreams and some of my talking to dead people and all of this, I connected to a world of energy that isn't of this one. I was definitely connecting to something else. And now I really feel like we are here because we're supposed to be here. And our journey is our journey. Each and every one of us has our own. And whether it's short, whether it's long, I look at death differently now. I look at life differently now.
Mm-hmm.
I look at people differently. Like I look at people and I'm like, hey, we're all here together. And the judgment, it seeps out because I am human, but I don't want to judge. I don't want to be mean. I don't want to be angry. I want everybody to feel what I feel, because it is like a pink cloud. Like there's a part where I'm walking out there and I'm like, I don't see the world the same. It's not in Technicolor and I'm not on acid or ayahuasca, but I don't see anything. My fears of controlling and my fears of all the fears I had, the fears of being a failure, the fears of being not smart. Oh, I still have not smart enough. Okay. I still have my fears, but they don't own me.
Right.
Yeah.
And they own me. They owned me.
Mm-hmm.
And I now know I have no control. And to let go of that is such a God, a gift.
Oh my gosh, what a gift. What a gift.
And I'm okay. Like, shit goes down and I'm like, oh, shit's go. And then I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I get up on stage as a comedian. I fail. Sometimes I really suck. Maybe most of the time. I don't even know. But I love doing it and it's okay to suck. And I'm like, it's okay. Where I was worried always, like, you got to keep it together. You got to look good. People go, you're so confident. I am so confident, right, as visually. But internally, I'm like, I'm a mess.
I think that's what's beautiful. And I love, you know, I think some transformations, people feel spiritual. And, you know, they talk about that. I love spirituality and stuff. But I think the reason I love it, or the reason you're phrasing it in those terms, because ultimately your transformation in some bigger sense is about love. And I think that comes out. You know, I think that's what you
Self-love.
Mean by that. Yeah, I Self-love. Think that's what you mean. Like, you call it spiritual, but I think ultimately it's just about... learning to love yourself.
You know, the thing that I got when you were talking is that everything you were doing through the journey of your son's illness and yours was, I'm going to try so hard, and I'm going to do it.
Yeah. I wish y'all could see Sarah's face right now when she does that.
It was too good.
But what is really noticeable about your place, the place that you're at now, is that there's a total surrender. There's a letting go. And the irony is, I mean, I think probably a lot of people have that. It's something that I struggle with a lot, and to the point that I actually got a tattoo, to my family's dismay. But
yes, yeah, I'm getting a tattoo.
That was my midlife crisis, was a tattoo on my ankle of a wave.
Because it's so tiny.
it's small, but it's a wave, because waves are things you can't control. Waves are, you know, you cannot fight it. The more you fight a wave, the worse it is. The more it brings you down.
But you can learn to navigate it.
But you can ride it. Right. You can let it see where it takes you. And it's a reminder for me to try and let go. It hasn't worked, but...
That's very cool, though, Sarah. That's very cool.
But I like the metaphor of it.
Yeah. I love the metaphor.
I love that, too.
And also, Sarah, what's interesting is that you were like, my midlife crisis. No, it's not a crisis. It's an awakening.
Yeah.
And if we respond to it as so, I will tell you, when you wake up and go, it's okay. I wake up pretty much every day and I'm like, I'm good today. Yeah. I'm not crazy. Yeah. We're good. Like, I'm going to be able to function. Yeah. I look at life like I'm now where I never did, right? Like, I was like...
Trying so hard.
It almost killed me.
But you were in that fight or flight survival mode. And
but
I think
I was always that.
Yeah, you
always were. You were
from traits.
From early on in my life.
Exactly.
Right.
From everything, from a sociopathic stepfather, like all the way through, beat me. It's interesting. I didn't know. Yeah. The PTSD actually was interesting because it was all the fears I'd had when I was like 8 years old and all the weird shit that guy did.
Wait, a stepfather who beat you?
He was a sociopath. I wasn't his child. And he did he was like a torture. Like, and we weren't with him long, but long enough that it was 6 through 9. And those are the formative years.
Yeah.
And he really did some crazy abusive stuff to me.
Jesus. This is a whole other podcast episode.
Well, but it's a reminder that if you have, you know, unfinished business from childhood,
it will come up
and it will come up when you're feeling your most vulnerable and traumatized. So
yes.
You were fortunate enough to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once you really deal with it, again,
is a fear. I think you said it, that people stay away from treating it because they're afraid it will own them. They're afraid that they'll never get through it.
Yes.
And so the avoidance, the numbing out, is really common. And I think you're such a great reminder that, you know, lean into it. You know, don't be afraid of it, because you can push through it and you can heal.
And when you numb yourself, the interesting part, and this is where I go in my whole airy fairy thing, the world will throw challenges. It will definitely, you know, the more denial you are, the more it wants to push at
back.
You.
Yeah.
So I now realize, with all of the doors, I literally stopped pushing. And I was like, wow, what a relief.
Yeah.
Because it was like, God, all these, and nothing appears too big anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Where everything seems so big. And it was like, I couldn't. And it's like, my son, he has a cough. And I'm like, okay, are you going to go to the doctor? Like, what are we going to do here? Where I'd be like, oh my God, do you have madness? Are we going to go down? Like, what's going to happen? Okay. And then I'd have the anxiety. Now I'm like, Listen, and this is going to sound really interesting or odd to you, but I know this does because I know it'll sound odd to a lot of people. I'm ready. Like, if whatever his journey or whatever my kid's journey is, with my daughter, it's a little different just managing her day to day, but like the bigger stuff, whatever's supposed to happen is supposed to happen. And I don't look at death like the end. I look at death like the end of this life and you're going to the next. Wow. You want to take me? I'm good. I've finished what I need to do. And now it's just a picnic. And that's what I'm like, whatever I had to suffer in this lifetime, not that I won't suffer more, but I'm going to see it differently. We are capable of so much. And we really, like, we can get through it all. And this isn't it. This isn't it. Yeah. Like, we don't have to judge and hold everybody hostage to everything. Just kind of be kind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And help people through it.
Yeah. You know, and to recognize, step out of yourself a little bit and to look at the person next to
you. That's right. Just be curious. Yeah. Just know what they're going through.
And open. Yeah.
So good.
And driving a Range Rover helps.
I love, my husband said, what kind of car are you getting? I'm like, another Range Rover. I feel great and sexy in it, and I'm going to keep that car.
Thank you
for having me. You guys are awesome.
Oh my gosh, thank you for coming. Now, where can people come find you, come see your comedy?
I'm all over. You can hit me up on Instagram, JT Winther, at Insta, whatever that thing. I'm terrible at all my social media stuff. And then Facebook, I'm Jessica Edwards Winther. Because I'm whatever, that's my maiden name.
Such a Jewish name.
And I know. Well, I was Gittleman. I was naturalized.
That makes
sense. Yeah, I was like, I'm a Gittleman. It's real. It's real, people. Edwards is just so like, and then I was like, I want to be Jessica Wilde. I mean, I just want to change my name completely. So I'm Jessica Winther. It's like give and a take.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Other F Word Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast, and visit us online at theotherfwordpodcast.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we'd love to hear your stories of struggle with failure. You can contact us at info@theotherfwordpodcast.com. See you next time.